Quentin Coldwater is brilliant but miserable. He's a senior in high school and a certifiable genius, but he's still secretly obsessed with a series of fantasy novels he read as a kid about the adventures of five children in a magical land called Fillory. Compared to that, his real life just seems gray and colorless. Everything changes when Quentin finds himself unexpectedly admitted to a very secret, very exclusive college of magic in upstate New York. He receives a rigorous education in the practice of modern sorcery. But something's still missing. Magic doesn't bring Quentin the happiness he thought it would. Then, after graduation, he and his friends make a stunning discovery. Fillory is real. That's a thumbnail description of Lev Grossman's new novel, The Magicians. At one level, it's a story about a boy who discovers that magic is real. At another, it's a meditation on the uses of enchantment. Grossman told Anne Strainchamps that he was one of those kids who fell in love with fantasy books.
Especially Narnia. I was a Narnia boy, which on the social scale of at least my elementary school was even lower than the Tolkien boys. We were the real bottom feeders.
Do you remember what the appeal was for you as a kid? What was it about fantasy that got you so hooked?
Well, I think it worked for me on two levels. The first level being both of my parents are English professors, and they have PhDs, and it was instantly clear to me how irritating they found it when I read fantasy, so that was gratifying. And then on the second level, I was not a terrifically happy child, and I really seized on the idea that there was another world out there, a different world.
A better one.
A better one. An upgrade was available, because this couldn't be the real world. There had to be something beyond it. And I really seized on that idea, and I really hung on to it for, you know, a good 30 years or so.
Well, today, of course, there's a whole new generation of fantasy writers, J.K. Rowling, Philip Pullman, dozens of others. This field, at least for kids, has really exploded. Any thoughts about why?
Well, there is something sort of global afoot. I think, you know, the 20th century was very much a romance with science fiction. I feel like the idea of progress, you know, the great potential of digital technology and space travel were so attractive to us for so long. And I almost feel as though, you know, when the millennium arrived, we began to think, well, you know, maybe there's things that technology can't give us. And I think this resurgent interest in fantasy, you know, part of it, I think, is an investigation into our past and into other kinds of values besides technological progress and what potential those things might hold for us.
So tell me about the novel you've written, The Magicians. What were you wanting to do with it when you started writing?
Well, I began writing it in 2004. I was waiting for another damn Harry Potter book to come out because it was 2004. It had been a year. It was going to be a year. And I wanted something to read, even if I had to write it myself. I was having a hard time, a real kind of midlife crisis. I was having trouble professionally. I was going through a divorce. And I was thinking a lot about how Harry Potter, which I love, and also Narnia, what kind of preparation they'd given me for life. You know, what did it mean that I really believed and hoped that there was another world, a magical world that I would someday find? And I feel like I needed to return to those stories and investigate them as a grown-up, as an adult, and in a way kind of rewrite them, but knowing what I knew now about what adult life was like.
Do you mean you felt as though you'd been sold a false bill of goods, that all those magical stories had made you feel that, you know, life was an upward trajectory and sooner or later you get to the wonderful magical part and everything would be good, and then you discovered, in fact, things weren't so great?
Well, not to be glib about it, but yes, in a way. I felt like Narnia and Harry Potter had not fitted me for the real world, and I wanted a story that sort of investigated what was it that those books left out.
Well, you begin it, like any self-respecting magical story, with your hero, in this case, a high school senior named Quentin Coldwater, who stumbles out of ordinary reality one day and into a world in which magic turns out to be real. What happens to him?
Quentin is 17 years old. He's very, very bright, and he's very, very unhappy. And I wanted to have happen to him what I wanted to have happen to me, which is that he would stumble into the realization that magic is real. And of course, when that happens, he believes that all his troubles are over. He believes that his life is going to be nothing but happiness from here on out. But what he doesn't realize yet is that his troubles are just beginning.
There's a moment at which he says magic turns out to be a lot wonkier than he thought.
Well, I never thought that magic was hard enough for Harry. I never understood. You know, you've got your wand and you sort of swish and flick with it and then you yell Expelliarmus or whatever, you know, which I love. But I always felt as if, you know, it ought to be harder. I didn't understand what they were studying the whole time because it seems like it would take about 5 minutes to master the entire magical corpus. So I wanted to spell out in a little more detail what kind of program of academic study would be necessary.
Can you describe some of it? Or maybe there's a section you could read.
I do have a book handy. Let me grab it and I'll read you the bit where I try to lay out my understanding of what would be involved. So here's the paragraph. Magic turned out to be about as tedious as it was possible for the study of powerful and mysterious supernatural forces to be. The same way that a verb has to agree with its subject, it turned out, even the simplest spell had to be modified and tweaked and inflected to agree with the time of day and the phase of the moon, the intention and purpose and precise circumstances of its casting, and 100 other factors, all of which were tabulated in volumes of tables and charts and diagrams, printed in microscopic jewel type on huge, yellowing elephant folio pages, and half of each page was taken up with footnotes, listing the exceptions and irregularities and special cases, all of which had to be committed to memory, too. Magic was a lot wonkier than Quentin thought it would be.
Quentin says that when it's working, he can almost feel it physically, and I'm looking at a line right here, it says, he feels like he's at the heart of a large and powerful system. He was its heart. When it was working, he knew it and he liked it. Have you ever felt that way?
Well, I find that magic tends to be, whether writers intend it to or not, working magic tends to be a metaphor for the creative process. You know, there's a moment, you're very often mistaken about this, but you feel as if you've just tapped into some kind of just substrate of deep human knowledge, and you are just getting it out there on the page. It's flowing through you, and you are nailing it, and it's just this sort of ecstatic moment. And I wanted to get some of that into the experience that he has of working magic, that he's connected himself to some kind of just incredibly pleasurable, powerful force which is flowing through him.
So at first, Quentin seems to have been kind of rescued from his late adolescent existential angst. You know, life is not only not meaningless, it's full of magic. And he's learned to cast spells, and he transforms himself into animals, and he also makes friends, and he falls in love. And he graduates, and things begin to go bad. What happens?
Well, one of the peculiarities of the universe of the magicians, which distinguishes it from a lot of other fantasy, is that there's no single being who incarnates ultimate evil. There is no Voldemort in the magicians. Likewise, there's no Sauron and there's no White Witch. And as terrible as those individuals are, they do have a very handy organizing influence on the universes that they inhabit, because you can pretty much tell, more or less, in most cases, who is good and who is evil. If you're an orc, you're evil. If you're an elf, you're good, and so on and so forth. Well, if there isn't any Voldemort in your world, things become a lot more complicated, and the world becomes a lot more shades of gray, and your adventure becomes much less about defeating the villain and much more about just trying to figure out what it is you are doing and what it is that magic is for.
You've also, into this mess where Quentin's really, as far as I can tell, spending most of his days hungover, an old college rival shows up and tells him that the magical world he read about in his version of the Narnia books is real. I mean, this really is like, imagine, you know, an old college friend shows up and tells you Narnia is real and he's been there.
Well, there's kind of an amazing character, and his name is Penny, and he's kind of a frenemy of Quentin's. And he's very erratic and is obviously brilliant and obviously, you know, he's quite odd and he doesn't really fit in with the social scene. And he kind of vanishes and he goes off, you know, to pursue his own research interests. And he pops up at a very unexpected moment, just sort of flushed with excitement because he's figured out that the world of Fillory, which they all think of as a fictional world like Narnia, and they've read books about Fillory, and they're fans of Fillory, but they always thought it was just a novel. Penny maintains that he's figured out a way to get to Fillory for real.
Except these poor kids, they keep going from one magical world to another, hoping that in this one, life will really be finally wonderful. And of course, it never is. Which I guess is what you were really wanting to do with the book, is, you know, explore what would happen if, in a sense, all your magical dreams came true and yet you're still you.
Yeah, it's very much a careful what you wish for scenario. You know, to look at it in another way, I think of the Narnia books as books that come very much out of World War II. And, you know, the myth that people made about World War II, which is that it was a heroic fight. It was a heroic battle. It was a battle where good and evil were clear and the good guys won. And when Quentin and his friends go to Fillory, I think of that, which is also a magical world, like Narnia, locked in a civil war. I think of that very much as a later and much sadder kind of war. I think of it much more, if you can imagine the Narnia that was based on Vietnam, or for that matter, the Narnia that was based on Iraq, which was a much more complex and less successful conflict. I think of that as what happens in The Magicians, a much more complicated and disillusioned kind of struggle.
And you're also suggesting that the thing that kids need to learn today is how to live in a universe that doesn't have that kind of organizing, clear, good versus evil morality.
Well, that I think is something that, you know, Narnia didn't train me up very well to do. I think as a kid, I really took the Narnia books as a kind of practical guide to negotiating, you know, my life and to settling moral quandaries and essentially how to be happy. And I found the older I get, the less practical that guide proved to be, to the point where I almost felt like I needed to update it a little bit for grown-ups. And I think that's what became The Magicians.
Lev Grossman, talking with Anne Strangechamps about his novel The Magicians. Grossman is a book critic and senior writer at Time magazine.